Good afternoon. I'm Warren Giroux of Sightline Wealth Management, and I'm here today with our second in our series of Smart Money Manager interviews. Today, we have Wayne Irgetz, of the President and Chief Executive Officer of Wager Capital, the sub-advisor to the Nine Point Canadian Senior Debt Fund. Welcome, Wayne. We're glad that you were able to join us.
Thank you for having me.
For our listeners, Wayne, who may not be familiar with the Canadian Senior Debt Fund, can you tell us what you're about, what kind of lending you do, just broad brush?
Sure. Thank you. Canadian Senior Debt Fund, we are a senior debt fund, and we lend, our methodology of lending is by being a traditional asset-based lender. And by that, I mean we assist risk essentially on two benchmarks. The first is we've got to be extremely comfortable with the ownership and management team of the company. And then if we get past that point, we then look to the collateral, and we essentially assess risk on if the company was to totally fail, would we be able to liquidate the assets, cover all our interest costs, all our fees, all professional fees involved, and get all of our money back? And if the answer is no, then we go no further. So the basis of our loans are they're highly collateralized. We rely heavily on third parties as part of our due diligence process. We use independent third parties to do background investigations and credit checks on the management and ownership team. We use independent third-party audit firms to go in and audit the firm, do an asset-based lending audit on the firm, both collaterally and systems-wise. And we use independent third parties to help establish the asset values that we're prepared to lend on and the companies that we're looking at. I should also mention we are a traditional asset-based lender. Those are our disciplines. And we essentially lend to old economy companies in Canada and to a lesser degree the United States, which are manufacturing distribution companies, no service companies, no hospitality, no construction, no natural resources, no cannabis. And finally, there's three distinct pools that we provide financing to. We have special situations, which would include late stage turnarounds, bridge loans, companies that may be going through some degree of financial reorganization, so they might have to do a CCAA restructure or a debtor in possession financing. Today, that pool represents less than 7% of our book. The next sector that we focus on are almost companies that are entirely the opposite. High growth companies driving fairly substantial revenues, but for a variety of reasons, they cannot fit the bank box. So, and as you know, the banks all have a box and you either fit in it or not. So generally these are high growth, profitable, strong EBITDA companies, but perhaps their debt to equity ratio is a little over what the bank will accept. So that today represents well over 70% of our book. And then finally, we are a big supporter of companies in the military and defense sector. And those, Canada has a lot of them, over 2,000 companies that cannot get bank financing. And so we finance that sector, and that sector today represents roughly 20% of our book.
Okay, thanks. So if I just can quickly review, you say the bridging finance makes up about 7%, the high growth companies represent about 70%, and the military and defense contractors about 20%. What would the balance be in the special situations?
Well, including that is special situations. That entire basket, special situations, bridge, CCAA debt financings, is that 6%. So.
Okay.
And we would normally expect a little more balance than that, but frankly, the fact that the bulk of our portfolio has been in that better performing pool has helped us well through this COVID-19 problem.
I was just going to ask you about the COVID. How has that impacted your borrowers? Have they been impacted, or has it caused them any difficulties?
Well, you know, the short answer is no. We started in mid-March to do a weekly analysis of our portfolios and continue to do that weekly. And we were very fortunate that over 92% of our borrowers were deemed essential service companies. So if anything, this COVID-19 situation has not been detrimental to them. In most cases, it's been positive. So right off the bat, those companies have focused extremely well over the last really 9-12 weeks and continue to do so. We did have two companies in our portfolio that were deemed non-essential, but we've been delighted, in fact, with the largest one who was a clothing manufacturer and has just remorphed into production of medical masks and gowns, so PPE products. I believe they will continue after COVID-19 to stay in that sector, and they've called back almost their entire workforce back in Canada and the United States, which is close to 450 people, signed some very significant contracts. So that one particular non-essential has just morphed into an entirely different entity. So cash flowing well, and we're very pleased with them. And the other non-essential, they just leaned a little bit more on their internet sales. And through internet sales, they've been able to cash flow, service their debt, and are continuing to do well. So we've been pleasantly surprised by how well, as of today, the portfolio has been performing.
If we can continue along this vein, so how many loans would you actually have in your book right now, in the loan book?
Yep, today we have 17 borrowers.
Okay, 17. And what is the sort of average duration or the shortest sort of loan to the longest loan, and what the average of the total portfolio would be?
Yeah, so we offer committed facilities to our borrowers, really generally speaking, for between 1 and 3 years. It's up to them to decide what term of loan they want. And our portfolio has about an 18-month overall average maturity.
Okay. I'm just wondering, this is sort of a very generic question, but a lot of people, you know, when we talk about private debt, a lot of their investors want to know, okay, why would we invest with a private debt company versus a bank, in the sense that why would someone go to a private debt versus a bank, and why should we invest in a private debt? Because you would think naturally it would be a higher risk situation, mm-hmm. and the loan rates would be much higher.
Why would someone want to borrow from you? Yes, I certainly understand that question. I mean, I've been in this form of lending, which is traditional asset-based lending, for well over 30 years, as have my foremost senior management team. And I've heard this over 30 years in many different ways and through very many cycles. And, you know, it is a very good question. Like in the early days, they would call ABL lenders of last resort. Why would you do this? And the answer to that is really, I think it's fairly simple. First of all, we have to look at Canada in terms of the availability of liquidity to companies in the middle market. And, you know, unlike the United States that has a very sophisticated secondary debt market, Canada does not. So when the banks say no to companies today, and a lot of these are very, very good companies, the banks, and as we will see over the next few quarters, the banks are going to tighten significantly because we've probably read over the last couple of days the loan losses provisions of the banks have been horrendous over the last couple of days, and they will tighten up in credit. And you've got very good companies that all of a sudden can't get financing through the Canadian banks. And they've got very limited options in Canada. Their choices are equity, if they can find equity. We don't really have a sub-debt market to any degree in the country. And that really leaves private debt to fill that gap, which, you know, in the United States, private debt is a major player in filling the gap. We would say ourselves, we just don't view ourselves as high risk because, number one, all our loans are fundamentally at 100% collateralized and over-collateralized, so that in the event that they would fail, and we really have not had any fail yet in our portfolio, we'll liquidate, get the money back, and get the interest back. And so really the investment is not at risk at all. The question as to why borrowers will pay low single-digit rates today and will continue to is because there is very little choice in the country. There are very few private debt asset-based lenders in the country. And a business that's facing a no from a bank, really, as I said, it has the choice. They can try to raise some equity, but quite often high-growth companies don't want equity. They don't want to dilute ownership until they're ready to do so. So a company like us, we come in, we finance them, we cover the bridge till they're ready to either bring in equity or sell the company. And similarly, companies that are having a little bit of a hiccup or a problem, they don't want to dilute either, because equity will have to give away more of the company than they would expect. So the reality of the Canadian market is these borrowers do not have a lot of choices. And that's why they would come to a private debt fund like ourselves.
So what kind of a interest rate would be charging these companies?
Mm-hmm. So today we are really a low double digit lender, generally in the 11 to 12% interest rate. Then we also do have closing fees and monitoring fees. So our gross IRR today on our loans is ranges in the area between 13.5% and 14.5%.
Okay. So if we can sort of back up the bus a little bit, when someone comes to you with a loan or asking for a loan, what kind of internal process do you go through? These are sort of more operational questions. Do you have a credit committee? How does that function? Who has the final say in whether you do a loan or not, and so forth?
Absolutely. So yeah, we are a very disciplined organization. When a client comes, there's a lot of information we're looking for, and it starts, first of all, as I mentioned previously, you just have to get comfortable with management and ownership, and then you really do a deep dive into the company. So you look at its last 5-year historical performance. You look at its monthly performance, also its forecast going forward. Then we send in our third-party audit firm, and our audit firm does what any audit firm does. They do a massive deep dive into the company. They will be counting inventory, doing test counting. They will be verifying the company's receivables. Do they exist? They will look at receivable write-offs historically. They will make sure the company's payables are all current. Do they owe the government any tax? It's just a massive deep dive. They also do a very deep dive into the company's systems, because part of doing an asset-based lending loan with a private debt fund like us is the ability of the company to report its collateral, its sales, its collections. And that is one of the first steps. And then finally, as I said earlier, we do have third-party appraisal firms go in, and they do a very detailed appraisal of the inventory, of the machinery and equipment, of the building, and we assess that on a, as I say, going out of business basis. So all of that third-party information combined with our financial analysis and our testing and our of the financials, of the forecasts, goes into a very extensive credit, which is prepared for our credit committee. And we also do send a copy of that credit to our partners at Nine Point, who also can look at the credit and also have the ability to comment on the credit. So it's quite collaborative with our friends at Nine Point. And then it goes to our credit committee, and then that credit committee either approves it or declines it. Once it's approved or declined, if it's declined, it doesn't really matter, I suppose, if it's approved. And so far, we've approved everything that we really have gone to committee because of that disciplined due diligence. Then we go on to legal. So we use lawyers just like everybody else. We generally will take out the entire banking relationship. So we take out the operating line, the term loan, and we continue to finance the business going forward. We also, once the loan is financed, There is weekly interaction with all of our borrowers in terms of collateral monitoring. We also will, in many cases, have that audit firm go back in throughout our lending relationship with our borrowers just to kick the tires again, make sure things are okay. And then myself and our senior management team, we will visit our borrowers at least quarterly, and really, quite frankly, it's more almost every second month again. Very, very hands-on oversight versus what they probably had experienced at a Canadian bank prior to joining our firm.
So how long does this, well, I guess two questions. How many are on the actual credit committee? How many people, mm-hmm. and who are they? And then position-wise. And then how long does this whole process take from when you first sort of originate a possibility to the finalization when actually you start advancing funds?
Sure. So I'll start with the second one. When we're initially approached by generally an intermediary representing the company, I would say about 70% of the time, 30% of the time, it's a direct contact with us. We send this company a wish list, and that wish list is a whole bunch of information, which I just mentioned we're looking for on the financial side, company history, CVs, et cetera. So it's in terms of timeline, we get that information, and through that, we will issue a proposal letter to these businesses explaining it's not a commitment. It's just a proposal letter outlining what we think we can do in terms of advance rates, interest rates, loan amounts, and it's going to be subject to receiving and collecting this financial information plus the third-party information that we've asked for. So I'm sorry to be long-winded. If you're going to do a timeline, then once the proposal is signed back, that's when our third-party diligence starts. So we will tell a new client that once the proposed letter is signed back, from that date to funding the new loan is generally 6 weeks. The second question you asked was with respect to the credit committee. Our credit committee is composed of both employees of WAGAR and also advisory board members. So our advisory board members, Stu Summers, probably one of the best chief restructuring officers that has practiced in Canada, very astute individual, and very, very, very clinical, and was used to going in and restructuring companies on behalf of the banks and also of the accounting firms as one member. Craig Miller, who is an ex-military but also ex-very senior banker who ran the second largest trust company in Canada for a number of years, sits on our board. Rick Hillier, who those of you that know of Rick was the equivalent of our Joint Chiefs of Staff, who ran the Canadian military up to 8 years ago, sits on our advisory board. We also then have internally myself, as well as Terry Crook, and Terry Crook is our Senior Vice President of Compliance and Operations for our company. So there's five of us involved in the credit process.
Okay. Another question on the returns of your fund. I see you have a target return of between 8 to 10% to the investor.
Yep.
I was looking at the monthly returns on the 9-point website and noticed that in March you had a 10 basis point return compared to most of the other months run between about 50 basis points to almost up to 1%. And then after in April, your return jumped from the 10 basis points in March to 1.25% in April. How was the return so low in March and then had this significant jump in April?
Yeah. So we use an independent third party BDO who have been doing quarterly mark to markets on our fund. And that is a discipline that we enjoyed very much. And in March they came in, and with the pandemic and with what's happening on the credit squeezes globally, they determined that notwithstanding the fact that all of our borrowers had paid their interest, and we had no difficulties for the month of March, they felt that based on the unknown of COVID-19 and the liquidity in the global market, they felt it prudent to put in basically loan loss reserves, not based on the performance of our performance, not based on the performance of our fund, but rather they just felt the right thing to do was, given we were in the midst of the early days of COVID-19, so they essentially put in a loan loss provision which wrote down the return of our fund in March, even though in fact we had had no difficulties. In April, they reversed that position, and what you're seeing is in the very significant increase in our return in April, essentially the good performance we enjoyed in April plus a reversal of the provisions that they put in March.
Okay, well that does explain it, and I guess it would have been a great time to buy in March after the write down.
I think it was a good time to buy, but I'll tell you, I think I have had a few more gray hairs after that. So we're kind of delighted the way it seems to have turned out. So.
Oh, I'm sure you did. I guess going forward, with as you mentioned, the banks more than likely, we have to all expect the banks are going to tighten up their lending standards. Do you see that as an opportunity for a fund like yours going forward?
We absolutely do. I mean, we absolutely see the third and particularly the fourth quarter as just a tremendous opportunity, not only for ourselves, but also all the private debt funds in Canada and as well in the United States, but particularly in Canada. There's no question the banks all have problems, and we're witnessing that today as well as yesterday in the reports of, Royal Scotia. The provision for loan losses has gone up significantly. And as a result, they are going to tighten up. They're going to tighten up dramatically. And that will absolutely, for us, create a tremendous amount of opportunities. And in fact, we saw that starting through last quarter of last year, where the bank PCLs continued to increase. And we found pre-COVID, November, December last year, we were seeing opportunities that we wouldn't have seen a year prior to that because the banks were starting to tighten. So our expectation is we really haven't seen anything yet. They're going to continue to tighten. They're going to continue to reduce liquidity in the market. That's going to frustrate some great companies that just are growing and need help. And we're extremely bullish on the last two quarters, and I would say that's being reflected right now in our the loans we're looking at right now. We're experiencing volume in terms of opportunities that we have not seen before. So we expect that to continue, and we expect that to eventually help us, assist us, put on some very, very good, solid transactions through the balance till the end of this of 2020.
Would that sort of give you an opportunity to do some loans, sort of high grade your book in a sense that you're getting maybe a chance to have a look at better collateral or stronger collateral than you might have in a more normal environment?
Yeah, it's absolutely quite possible. I mean, I think that that the two things we'll see is we've certainly never been shy to ask for additional collateral, which we will continue to do. I think we will see situations with improved collateral. Maybe not any better from a liquidation perspective, because bottom line for us is we want to know what we're going to get if we liquidate. But I think we will see more abundant collateral pool. I also think it's going to give us an opportunity for a risk premium in the market. I think there will be situations where, because liquidity gets tighter, we're going to be able to get a higher rate of return on some of the loans we do this year as well.
Okay, that sounds good. I think that pretty well covers everything that I had. Is there anything you would like to tell our listeners, Wayne, to give them a little different insight on what you do and how you do it?
I'd just like to point out that You know, what we do is asset-based lending, and ABL is an extremely mature product, particularly in the United States, where it's been around well over 90 years. And in Canada, I mean, I've been with it since it started here, so let's say it's been here 30-plus years. And the one thing you find about asset-based lending structures, traditional asset-based lender structures like we do, is loan loss histories, both in good and bad times in ABL, are generally well below a quarter of 1%. So, and that compares so much better to what you would find under conventional bank lending. So, you know, we're going through a tough time here economically, and we're going to come out of that. And these loans that we have on our books today are performing well. The returns are there, and as of now, no write-offs. I expect there's probably, I'm very biased, but there's certainly in terms of an asset risk, if there's a very conventional approach to ABL, your investors should feel comfortable not only in the portfolio, but also the returns that it can produce.
Okay. Well, I think we'll wind it up with that, Wayne. Thank you once again for taking the time out of your busy schedule to have a discussion. I appreciate it, and look forward to the next time. Thank you.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you so much, and you know, stay safe and be positive.
You as well.